inside the minds of top competitive shooters, firearms instructors, gear and gun manufacturers, journalists, and other people on the cutting edge of the firearms nation. Join us and get answers to the questions you want to know. And now, here's your host, Arik Levy.
Welcome to the Firearms Nation podcast. And today I am reaching into the vault to bring you a replay of an interview I did with championship shooter BJ Norris. Now, the upcoming World Speed Shooting Championship is about to occur in April. And I thought it'd be great to revisit this interview I did 3 years ago with BJ, who is by far, I think, one of the fastest men on earth when it comes to speed shooting. It is a interesting breakdown on how you can go faster. Now, if you don't shoot Steel Challenge, that's not a big deal, because the principles that BJ talks about in this episode are universal, especially if you want to go fast. And who doesn't want to go fast? So sit back and enjoy this re-release from the Firearms Nation podcast, and have a great weekend, this holiday weekend. I am here with yet another person from Idaho. It's amazing. I was just talking with BJ before we started recording about, you know, how many good shooters are out in Idaho. You know, it's a place a lot of people should go and hang out, because you'll get better.
Idaho's awesome.
But anyways, I'm here with BJ Norris, and a lot of you know BJ from just his complete domination of Steel Challenge. You know, you look back in history and some of the guys, you know, Brian Enos, who obviously is on the summit, and, you know, Rob Latham, Jerry Barnhart, all these guys did that Steel Challenge. And there's that video out there up on YouTube. I think it's How to Go Faster or something. It's called like that. Lenny McGill.
But Yep.
But you see these guys just blazing away. And, you know, currently, I think there was that TV show, I want to say Hot Shots, or that's the movie. I can't remember.
Hot Shots was done by Brian Special. It was a couple years ago.
Right.
Yep.
So yeah, that really focused a little bit on some of the guys shooting Steel Challenge. So I really wanted to get BJ on. So thank you very much for coming on board.
Oh, I appreciate you having me. You know, it's really fun to get on these things and talk about, you know, Steel Challenge in particular. That's kind of, I would say, my specialty. I shoot many other sports, USPSA, IDPA, three gun, but yeah, I would say three gun is really, Steel Challenge, you know, is really my specialty and what I call home, and just, you know, kind of the things we were talking about before we got started of, you know, when I got involved in Steel Challenge, there's so many little unique aspects to this sport that you don't see in the other sports. And a lot of it is based around the fact that, you know, in USPSA, IDPA, three gun, you know, you have one shot at the stage, you get a walk through, you've never seen it before, every stage is unique. You walk up, you figure out, okay, I think this is the best way to do it. And you go, you shoot it, and then chances are you're never going to see that stage again, you know, excepting the classifier. You know, but Steel Challenge, the stages have been totally unchanged, you know, for the past about 10 years now, you know, and before that, there's still several of the stages that are basically original to the sport from way back, you know, in the 70s and the 80s, you know, so there's aspects of the sport that have remained essentially unchanged for many, many years. So you have the ability to set the stages up, you know, at your range and practice and figure out what is truly the fastest, best way to shoot the stage. You know, and then when you get to the match, you got five runs on it to put up your best score. You know, so you have the added pressure of not only having to perform it once, but you have to do it, you know, five times in a row. And, you know, the separation of the top shooters at Steel Challenge is, I mean, down literally to the hundredth of the second. A couple years ago, the difference between first and second place at the Steel Challenge Nationals was actually 1/100 of a second.
Wow.
You know, so that's anything. That's anything over the course of, you know, the 195 rounds that are required for score. You know, 1/100 of a second is nothing. You know, but that's what it comes down to almost every time. It comes down to, you know, margins that are under a quarter second.
Let me ask you, you know, did you get started in Steel Challenge, or is this something that you kind of, when you were coming up and shooting, that you kind of said, well, I like this a lot better than the regular stuff?
It's something that I got involved in, you know, after I was already actively shooting in USPSA. I started shooting USPSA when I was 11, up in the Northern Virginia area. And I shot USPSA exclusively up until about 2005. 2005 is when I got involved in Steel Challenge. It was the third Steel Challenge that I went to. And, you know, from there, I've been, I think, all but 1 year to the Steel Challenge. I've been to, I think, all but one of the Steel Challenge Nationals that was started. I believe it was 2006 or 2007 they started the Steel Challenge Nationals. I've been to all but one of those. And, of course, you know, the different regional matches, you know, that are around the country, I've been to many, many of those as well. And, you know, when I got into Steel Challenge, when I went to my first match in Piru, the Steel Challenge, I mean, it just really...
That was your first match?
The third Steel Challenge match, yeah. I went to the World Championship in Piru, and, you know, that's how I got started. And it's kind of a funny story, and it goes back to, you know, like we talked about, the ability to practice the stages. Well, at Steel Challenge, they always had a practice range set up. I didn't have any steel back then because I didn't know if I wanted to make the investment to buy, you know, all of the required equipment and all this. So, you know, I heard they had a practice range. Figured I'll go out there, you know, for a day or so before the match and get some practice in, and that'll be good. And at that time, of course, I shot USPSA. I was shooting open. You know, so I had a pretty reasonable idea of when I would fatigue for practice. I took like 800 rounds that was dedicated to practice. And I got out there, and I very quickly found out that was not enough. I burned through that in like 2 hours. And then I started dry-firing the stages because that's all. So the next year I went in 2006, I think I took like 8,000 rounds.
Oh my God.
To practice. Yeah. A little bit of the growth. you know, basically dedicating, you know, when I go out to that environment, that training, you know, basically that final training camp is what I call it. You know, where I'm not dealing with work. I'm not dealing with any outside distractions. I'm there to shoot and do nothing else. You know, I basically budget 2,000 rounds a day.
A day?
You know, a day for that practice. My record is 3,300.
In a day?
In a day.
How did you touch the gun? It must have been smoking.
I had two guns.
Okay.
I had two guns.
And a cooler.
And a cooler. That's exactly right. I was alternating. I'd shoot one gun and get too hot. I'd throw it in the cooler. Full of ice. It would cool off while I shot the other one until it got too hot, and just swap back and forth the whole day.
Damn.
Just pouring oil on it the whole time, you know, keeping it running. I don't intend to ever break that record. It was when I was young and perhaps not as smart as I am now.
So, okay, so you were shooting USPSA for a while. Were you GM yet in USPSA when you moved over to Steel Challenge?
I believe I was.
Okay.
If I wasn't, it was right in that same time frame that I made GM. I know I was 16 when I made GM, so that would have been 2005. So it would have been right in that same time frame.
So when you got into Steel Challenge, you already kind of knew how to shoot. That was a given. But
right, the basis was there. The fundamentals were there.
But now you're like you said, you're shooting at a very it's very different. If people haven't shot Steel Challenge, it requires, it seems to me, a lot more focus. You know, Jerry Barnhart came back into Steel Challenge a couple of years ago down here in Florida, and the intensity, and I've trained with Jerry, and I know he's an intense guy, but the intensity between each run, I mean, it's similar to something you see at the Olympics, you know, that kind of intensity of of focus and execution. So it's very different than that, you know, shooting a stage in USPSA. What did you do to start getting that kind of focus?
Well, I mean, something that I've always, you know, kind of been focused on and been proud of is my ability to focus. You know, that's something that I learned very early on, just watching. When I first started shooting, I was shooting regularly club matches with Todd Jarrett, Phil Strader, and I saw that, you know, from kind of the very beginning, you know, and the ability to, for those guys, and Phil especially, to be able to switch on and off. You know, when it's time to shoot, it's extremely focused, you know, on the task at hand, but then, you know, part of it, and what I think helps is when you're not shooting, to not be that super laser focused, because that wears you out, you know. So I think one of the big things that's important to learn is the ability to switch on and off. You know, so, you know, as, you know, at that time, like I said, I was working on making GM. So, you know, draws were a very big part of it. You know, so you start working on those fundamental skills. And the thing about Steel Challenge is you instantly know whether you screw up. If you screw up, you know it. And there's no hiding from it. It's not, you know, like a USPSA stage where, you know, maybe you shot a delta, maybe you had a miss, but
it's a double.
Yeah, depending.
It's a double on the target.
That's a 20-yard swinger. I shoot doubles all the time.
Yes, I've seen that.
But you know, it's very different in that there's no getting that time back. It's not. I say you can't go to the next stage and, oh, this one's a high hit factor stage, so I can run a little bit faster and I can make that, you know, make those points up. You know, maybe the other guy will have a, you know, maybe he'll have a miss, and, you know, through the magic of the mathematical calculations of the USPSA scoring system, it'll all balance out in the end. You know, Steel Challenge is straight up time. There is no getting it back once it's gone. You know, so you really have to be able to focus on what's going on, have a very, very strong visualization and rehearsal routine. And then, you know, if something goes wrong, you got to instantly forget about it. You can't worry about what just happened, you know. And some of the best money I've ever spent, I'm sure everybody knows who he is, Lanny Bassum. I was able to take a small group class with him at one time. I believe it was about 6 years ago. And I got to say, that was hands down some of the best money I've ever spent learning how to shoot.
Did you go to Texas for that? Or you were living in Texas, so it wasn't
Living in Texas. I was living in Texas at the time, so I only lived about 2.5 hours from his office. And it was really neat because I was the only other shooter in the class with him. Just because it was, you know, mental management for everything. So we had a stock trader in there, a guy, you know, entrepreneurs, a doctor. You know, but I was the only person who was a shooter. So we related, you know, on a much different level than some of the other students. It was a really neat experience. And, you know, it just really clarified, you know, a lot of what needs to take place, because from a mental management standpoint, shooting Steel Challenge and shooting small bore rifle, which Laney is famous for, is very similar. You know, if you fire a bad shot, you know it, and there's no getting it back. So you have to have, you know, that mental program to perform each and every time, you know, you pull the gun up so that you have success. If you don't have success every time, chances are, you know, you're not gonna win the match. You know, if you don't have the ability to, you know, shrug off a bad shot and come back and finish out, you know, the runs that you do have remaining, finish those out at least solid so you don't have any mistakes on the clock, you know, you're probably not going to have a lot of success in the match. So, you know, definitely, you know, studying his material was a big step, and then having the ability to actually train with him was probably some of the biggest things that helped.
Now, when you got into Steel Challenge, were you starting at like a 22 open, or were you going right to the metal gun pistol?
No, since I shot USPSA open, I jumped right in with open center fire. You know, the first year I went, I basically just took my USPSA open gun and subbed in a 115 grain bullet instead of the 124 with the same powder charge. That was a huge mistake. It was a terrible idea.
Why? You did that because you figured you just needed a hit. You didn't need to have the regular type of bullet. So why is that a bad idea then? Because I know a lot of people do that.
Well, basically, it's still way too much. I mean, steel challenge. I mean, I was shooting on 115 grain bullet at it was 158 power factor or something. You know, and that's just, especially with the way that particular gun was set up, that still it was ported and had all these holes in it. You know, because it was set up for major power factor. That was just still way too much for steel challenge. If you look at most of the guys, you know, now, you set up a steel gun, you're setting it up, it's got no popple holes in it, it's got, you know, no porting, it's got a comp, and then you're shooting, you know, loads that barely make minor power factor.
Right.
And a lot of it, believe it or not, is actually not based around the recoil. The recoil is not really what hurts you. It's actually just the blast that happens, you know, when the gun fires. You know, it's loud. There's a lot of blast. There's a lot of interference between you and the target. You know, I'm looking at the target. I'm wanting to see the hit. I'm wanting to hear the hit, you know, on the target. And the gun's so super loud, you know, that makes it more difficult to hear. And especially now that there's no more stop plate in the sport, you know, there's no reason to shoot anything that's like super hardcore in terms of loads. I used to shoot when the stop plate was in place. I would shoot like a 95 grain bullet at like 1,300 feet a second.
Okay.
Just so it got downrange and got to the target quicker when that's what stopped the time. But now it's, you know, last shot fire just like the other sports. So there's really no reason to do that. So I just shoot a, you know, 115 or 124 grain bullet at minor power factor. And, you know, that's good enough.
Are you still, but you've won titles in both divisions, correct?
Correct. I won titles in Rimfire, Limited, Steel Master, which is the aggregate, and as well as the Open Division. So right now I hold the world record for an iron sight gun, a limited gun, at basically just under 80 seconds, a high 79 second run for an iron sight gun. I'm the only person who has shot under 80 seconds with an iron sight gun in a match, and there's still only three people who have shot under 80 seconds in a match anyway, and that's myself, Max, and KC. We're the only ones that have shot under 80 seconds a match score anyway with an open gun, and I'm the only one to have done it with an iron sight gun as well.
Just so people know, what type of gun were you using for that?
For the iron sight run, I was using my Wilson Combat. It's just a 5-inch, 9mm 1911. It's actually the same gun I shoot in ESP and IDPA. So it's, you know, bushing barrel set up exactly the same way. Yeah, I was just using the speed holster. I shot it in USPSA single stack. You know, they set the gun up for me so I could basically do anything with it. You know, but it's just a basic, you know, single stack 9mm that Wilson built for me. It's probably got the best trigger on it I've ever had on a gun. They did a fantastic job on the trigger pull. And of course it's got the Wilson sights on it and Hogue grips, and yeah, it's got the secret sauce to it, I guess. You know, I've had, since I started shooting the gun, I don't think I've shot a bad match in an iron sight, and it's just the gun is balanced so well. You know, it just very naturally points to the targets, and that's the biggest thing, especially in iron sight. You can't have any makeups. You know, I probably in that match earlier this year that I shot that score, you know, on makeups that I had to keep on the clock, I probably had less than five across the whole match, you know, that I actually had to keep for score. I had a few more. There were throwaways. That's the beautiful part about Steel Challenge. you get to throw something away. but actual makeup shots that were on the clock, I mean, I probably had less than five. And, you know, that's, to me, that's really the key with an iron sight gun is if you have a makeup shot, it takes you so long to be able to make the shot up, you know, because if you've already missed it once, you want to go back to it and you really want to hit it, you know, so you take a little bit of extra time, you pause, you look at the sights, you confirm everything's good to go, and then you press the trigger again. You don't want to rush your trigger pull and, you know, and then just basically go to war with a target. You know, it's very easy to do with an iron sighted gun. And I think that's really the key for, you know, putting up really good times with iron sight guns, whether it be single stack, production, limited, whatever it is. If you can drive the gun to the target and hit it the first time, then you're probably going to be okay. You're going to have a good score. You know, it's not going to be as fast as an open gun. You know, even with some makeups, you can make up stuff so much faster with an open gun. You can get away with, you know, really, really pushing on the gas, you know, and if you need a makeup shot with an open gun, it's generally pretty easy to go back and do it because you have so much more visibility with a red dot. But with an iron sight gun, the key is really, really to hit the target on the first shot.
All right, let's get into some practicals with Steel Challenge. So if someone comes to you and they want to learn how to shoot Steel Challenge well, what are the things that you're telling them to focus on in terms of their training?
The biggest thing and number one that I always have people focus on with Steel Challenge is the draw. You know, you have 31 different runs you have to keep for score, or excuse me, 31 runs that you have to shoot between all the stages. If you shave even a tenth of a second off your draw, you're going to save like 3 seconds across the entire match. And that's before you enter fire a shot. If you can pick up a tenth of a second, you know, you've already put 3 seconds over everybody else in the field. You know, so the draw is really the single most important training aspect that you can do through Steel Challenge. And it's great because it's the least expensive. You can dry fire. You know, I train when I'm getting ready for Steel Challenge. I mean, I'll spend 15 minutes a day doing nothing but, you know, wrist above shoulders draws. And, you know, that's great because you can do it at home. There's no cost to it. And it's the easiest way to dramatically improve your score in Steel Challenge. And then, you know, when we get to the the actual shooting portion, you know, the most important aspects to it is really target transitions, because that's all you're doing. You know, so I really have people focus on when the gun gets to the target, they already have the trigger prepped and they're ready to fire. You know, they don't snap the gun to the target and then they're sitting there, they haven't prepped the trigger, they've come into the target, as Jerry Mitchwick would say and taught me, you come into the target with a dead gun, you're going to see the sights on the target, you're going to look at it, and then you're probably going to jerk the trigger because you see the sights exactly where you want them. You want the gun to fire right away. So chances are you rush your trigger pull, and then that's going to, you know, knock the gun off target and you're going to miss. Okay. So
before you go any further, let me just clarify two things. When you're drawing the gun and you're coming out on target, you're drawing the gun and you're prepping as you're pushing that gun out so you can break the shot as soon as you get on, or are you making sure you have a good draw that your sights are on before you start breaking that shot?
So I'm prepping the trigger basically as soon as the gun hits parallel with the ground. You know, so it's pointing away from me. My finger's on the trigger and I'm starting to pull slack out of it, especially if I'm shooting production. You know, I shot my Wilson Brigadier Tactical in production at Steel Challenge this year too. You know, so a double action trigger pull, you know, for sure. You know, as soon as it's safe to do so, you need to start pulling some slack out of that thing. So as when the sights come up on target, you know, you've got it most of the way there.
And then you're prepping on every shot for your transitions. You're prepping every shot basically in Steel Challenge.
Absolutely. I prep the trigger on every shot I fire, unless mean, probably unless the target's from me to this computer screen, you know, I'm prepping the trigger going through the same order of operations. Now, you know, depending on the target, that trigger prep may look slightly different. You know, obviously, I'm going to prep the trigger a little bit different if I'm shooting, you know, a 25-yard plate versus if I'm shooting a rectangle at 7 yards. You know, that trigger prep looks different. You know, but for sure, I'm wanting to make sure my fingers in cycle, you know, so that I have movement, I have, you know, a defined cycle of what I'm doing every single time. You know, if you look at slow motion footage of most of the top guys, especially on like Smoke and Hope, you're going to see him come and hit the front of the trigger guard and come all the way back, you know, but that's still a cycle. You know, they're not, you will see constant, consistent movement of their trigger finger throughout the stage. You know, you're not going to see them start, stop, do all this madness with their finger. It's going to be a smooth motion, you know, versus if you look at, you know, Outer Limits or something, you're probably not going to see many fingers leave the face of the trigger. They're going to be, you know, more riding the trigger, not necessarily resetting the trigger. I don't ever do a trigger reset. I come, you know, most of the way out, even if my finger doesn't actually leave the trigger face. I'm letting the trigger out way past its reset point. You know, but that's going to look totally different on Outer Limits and Smoke and Hope, for instance. You know, but definitely with every single shot, every single stage, you know, there is a definite cycle and motion to your trigger press, so that, I said, as soon as the gun comes on target and the gun settles, you can go ahead and break the shot. I said, totally different if you're swinging the gun on Smoke and Hope. You know, the targets are big, they're close. You don't have to have a real refined sight picture to hit them. You know, if you're shooting open, basically, if you can see white through the window, you're going to hit the target. you know, but, and in that, it's important, you know, to be able to leave the gun on the target until it fires. You know, that's the other big thing that I see is that, and this goes for every sport, this isn't just Steel Challenge, is that people will see the sights where they want them, and they'll make the decision to go ahead and fire, and then they'll look away or do something. They're on to the next task when they make the decision to fire the gun rather than when the gun actually fires. So there's that time gap there between when your brain says, shoot the gun, and the gun actually shoots. You know, there's lock time on the actual gun itself, and then, you know, there's just that delay of you made the thought, and that has to be translated into this guy down here. And so there's that gap. So if you look away, chances are your hands are going to follow where your eyes went. So it takes a lot of discipline, you know, to lead your eyes on the target and what you're trying to hit, until you see the sights actually lift, you know, and you feel the trigger actually break, rather than just when you make the decision to fire. And, you know, if you can get those things down, then you have tons of success no matter what gun you pick up or what sport you're trying to shoot.
All right, so you can dry practice draws at home. That's easy. Transitions, you can set up the... Do you, right. You know, have you seen some guy came up with all the Steel Challenge, like it's like a banner that you can hang up, and if you stand at 7 yards, it gives you the approximation. Have you seen that before?
I have, and, you know, to me, it's cool, but I'm one of the guys that also says the only way you get better at shooting is to go shoot it. You know, so when you look at draws in particular, I don't see, going back into some of the very beginnings of what I teach shooters when they're coming up, is draws are not actually shooting skills. It's a non-shooting skill. The only three true shooting skills are sight alignment, sight picture, and trigger control. Everything else is a non-shooting skill. So truly the only way you get to where you want to be with those skills is to go shoot. You know, you can do a lot of the non-shooting things, draws, reloads, and even, you know, some transitions to a degree, you know, dry fire or with training aids. I've used the laser shot systems pretty extensively. I worked with them, and they actually have a Steel Challenge program. I mean, it's really cool. I mean, it really, really is, and it's very, very close. But it's still not 100% the same as drawing the gun and actually, you know, pulling the trigger on your gun, having the recoil, having the noise, having the blast, and all of these intangible things, you know, that just aren't there unless you're actually shooting. You know, if you go look at my practice area for Steel Challenge at my range, I have all the stages laid out. They're not all set up at once, but I have the box in one defined place. There is a pile of brass that's like this deep next to that box. And you know, that's really how, when you start talking about getting super dialed in at Steel Challenge, that's how you got to do it. You know, it really comes down to, you know, I don't like the term muscle memory, but it's the easiest way to, you know, communicate it in a lot of ways, is that, you know, if you look at, and I saw this with Jerry right when I first got into Steel Challenge. When I was in Texas, I was only about 2 hours away from Jerry Michalik, and I was very close to him. So we trained together quite a bit, and I could watch that man stand in a box, close his eyes, and move his hands around, and if the target was 2 feet from where it should be, he could tell you exactly where it was. He said, that target is 6 inches too short, and it's 2 feet to the left. Go move it.
It's amazing.
I mean, you get to the point where you shot it that much, you know, if something is not where it should be, you know, and you know, it's some people would call it a crutch, really. I mean, because you're not responding, you're not taking, you know, 100% visual cues of where the target is and where, you know, the sights are. But I mean, it really does. I mean, when we're talking about, you know, that level of competition, it makes a difference. I mean, imagine, you know, you made the comparison to the Olympics. I mean, imagine if they moved the pole vault and they moved where you put your pole 6 inches backward, you know, or I would theorize even an inch backward, you know, from where it should be. Most people say, oh, an inch, that's not that big a deal, you know, but I'm sure it would absolutely decimate what people do, because they're so used to it being the certain way, and they're so used to it being, you know, true and correct to the drawing. If you move it around, mm-hmm. you know, it's going to have an effect, you know. So if you're, you know, really, really hardcore in the Steel Challenge, you know, you gotta hit the range.
The biggest thing with Steel Challenge that probably affects most people is the need for speed. They see that speed of somebody and they want to duplicate it. And so they go fast and they end up always crashing and burning. Every Steel Challenge match I've gone to, it's the same thing. So the question
it doesn't stop.
No, but the question I'm sure you get asked all the time is, how can I go fast? So how can people get faster?
Right. The easiest way to get faster is to actually force yourself to shoot faster and do that in practice, not in the match. But that really is the easiest way, you know, for you to get faster, is you just have to stand on the range and you have to mentally force yourself to move the gun faster, to pull the trigger faster, to draw the gun faster. You know, you have to really push your comfort zone of where you want to be to get faster. And a lot of what happens when you do that is you miss a lot. You know, so when you're in practice, you're, you know, weeks out from the match, and I do this personally, even to this day, you know, if I'm 3 weeks away from the match, I will go as fast as I can. If I'm not hitting the targets, I don't care.
Really?
I really don't care in practice, because what I'm doing is I am forcing myself to shoot fast, and sooner or later, my eyes and my brain are going to learn to process information at that speed, and then I'm going to start hitting the targets. It's just the same as the great analogy is when you thirst run to drive. You know, you get behind the wheel, you're going 30 miles an hour down the city street, and you think the world is about to end because you're not used to it. Your brain isn't used to taking all the inputs, you know, and being able to make all the adjustments. Totally new. Okay, you get pretty good on the city streets. Then you go into rush hour traffic. Oh my God, I'm gonna die. Because now traffic is moving at 70 miles an hour. There's a guy behind you. This guy over here is cutting in. This guy is going this way. And then you do that for a while. And next thing you know, you're sitting there. You're driving with your knee. You got a burger in one hand and you're texting with the other. And it all seems totally fine and normal, because now you're used to doing all those actions. Your mind is used to, you know, every 2 seconds or 3 seconds doing a sweep with all your mirrors. You know, all of these things are automatic. Everything feels natural. And the only way you got to that point is you just did it. You know, you didn't have a choice. So shooting is really the same way, especially with steel challenges. If you force yourself to shoot at that speed, before you know it, all of a sudden you're going to start seeing flashes of the sight. You're going to be like, oh, hey, that was pretty cool. I saw exactly where that shot landed. And then before you know it, all of a sudden you're seeing every shot. And you go, oh, I missed that target, you know, at 3 o'clock by 6 inches. Now you can call your shots, and now you're seeing your shots. You're seeing, you know, you can pick them up faster. And then, you know, all of a sudden you're shooting at that speed that you thought was totally out of control and wild, you know, now all of a sudden you're hitting the targets every time at that speed. And it's simply, I said, a function of forcing yourself to shoot at that speed. You know, now, obviously when I'm getting ready for the match, like it's 2 or 3 days before the match, I'm not doing that anymore. You know, I'm now no longer in training mode per se. I'm in warm-up mode, you know, where I'm going to warm up and do all the things I want to have happen at the match. So I'm going to draw the gun, I'm going to hit the targets every time, you know, and that's going to be the speed's what it's going to be at that point, you know. But in the training leading up to, if you can force yourself to shoot faster, you're going to find yourself hitting faster sooner rather than later, as long as you can do it on a consistent basis, because your eyes are going to get used to processing that information. You're going to be able to see faster, and you're going to be able to hit faster.
So when you go to the match after experiencing that exhilarating feeling of going fast and shooting fast, you get to the range and you're shooting a match now, and you're shooting deliberately, and it feels extremely slow. What is the balance for a match that, you know, do you want to make sure that, like you said earlier, that you're not having to do a makeup shot, or do you kind of like feel like you need to be going a little bit faster than what you'd probably have to do if you were just trying to hit the target? You know what I mean? Like, are you really making the gun stop on each target, or are you floating the gun in between each target?
That's really the hard balance to strike. And, you know, a lot of it, I'll be honest, a lot of it depends on how the squad is shooting as a whole. You know, if everybody's standing up there just laying down monster runs, you know, that you start feeling that pressure, you start getting, you know, that feeling in your gut of want to go fast. You mentioned it earlier, you know, and it's hard to strike the balance between, you know, being deliberate and hitting the targets versus, you know, trying to quote unquote keep up with the pack. And a lot of that comes down to that mental management that we touched on earlier. And that is, trusting your abilities so that you know, my relaxed, deliberate speed is fast enough for what it needs, you know, for what it needs to be. I don't need to lay down the monster runs every single time, you know, to be able to maybe not necessarily win the stage, but shoot consistently enough and win the match. And that's the hardest balance to strike, and really you only get it by experience, you know, by being there and doing it, shooting matches and getting more and more comfortable in the competitive environment. You know, you see it all the time, and one of the best at it is Eric Raffel. When you watch him shoot, if everybody in his squad is doing really good and pushing on him, he'll go a little bit faster, a little bit faster, a little bit faster, and then as soon as, you know, he is not, I would say, in danger anymore, he will instantly let up and shoot totally consistently, you know, and Steel Challenge is kind of the same way. You know, I've had a couple situations where, you know, going into the last stage or two, all you have to do is just hit the targets, you know, because of what other factors had happened before. You know, all I had to do is just go out there, hit the targets, and be done, you know. And you just have to have that presence of mind. You know, we used to track the scores like really, really closely, to where we knew exactly where each other was. Generally, we don't do that anymore, you know, but we all have a pretty good sense of where we are. We're keeping track in our heads of, hey, that guy had an 8-8 there, I was 8-7, but he got the, you know, a running total of within, you know, half a second of where each other is. So we know, you know, what needs to be done. And you know, when it comes time that we got to lay down, you know, the monster runs, well, then you know, you throw on some DMX or something in your headphones and you get all pumped up and get the party started.
Do you feel fast when you're shooting? You know, I mentioned this, I think it was when I was talking to Brian Enos, that I was shooting and I got to that state where, you know, it didn't seem like it was like I was watching myself in a movie shoot, and I was shooting so fast that I almost felt like I was losing control. And then like, I couldn't recreate that at that moment. But, and I mean, I was really shooting fast, and I just wondered, you as a guy who's consistently winning these matches, do you have that same experience? Are you like in a total subconscious state where you're not seeing, you know, in your own head, it's just right, like you're seeing from a different perspective?
It depends on the day. It really depends on the day, and there's so many factors that go into it. You know, but I know when I'm shooting my best, I don't feel like I'm shooting that fast. You know, and a lot of it's just visual. You know, if your eyes are, if you're seeing really good that day, you know, your eyes are, I would say, warmed up. I don't know if that's the right term. I don't know the way to warm up your eyeballs. There's no stretching movements you can do. I know he's not that sound very comfortable, you know, for your eyes. But, you know, it just depends. You know, if it's a good overcast day, everything's very visible, very flat light, you know, it's very easy to, you know, to see well. Then those days are the best days, and you're not feeling like you're rushed. You know, if I'm feeling like I'm rushed, I'm deliberately trying to lay down, you know, one of those monster runs as needed, or quite frankly, I'm probably not shooting that good that day. You know, because I'm not, my eyes, when you feel like you're shooting fast, your eyes are not keeping up with what's going on in front of you.
Let me talk some practical stuff here. When for iron sight shooters, are you focused? Are you doing a hard sight focus? Are you doing a target on most stuff? Because I've heard different. You know, you can go on these forums and people have all these great ideas. But you know, you're a subject matter expert in this. What are you doing?
I'm no expert.
Oh, come on, don't be modest.
I don't know what I am, but I'm no expert. So that's a great question, and something that honestly I differ from most shooters. Sight focus versus target focus is depending on the stage and the individual target. Like Smoke and Hope, it's all target focus. You know, obviously, Outer Limits or something that requires precision, it's all sight focus. But the single biggest area where I differ from most other iron sight shooters is I pretty much always shoot with one eye closed. Yes.
Not taped over or anything, but you're just actually closing the eye.
Yeah, not taped over, not anything. I actually close mine on dominant eye, which is my left eye. I'm lucky in that I'm not cross dominant. I close my left eye anytime that I'm using a sight focus. I'm closing eyes. So Smoke and Hope, yeah, I shoot both eyes open because I'm looking right at the target. But any other time, and this goes for USPSA, IDPA, Stupid Challenge, especially the Yankee Cup, any sport that I'm using a sight focus is I'm closing an eye. And you know, shooting an iron sight pistol, 95%+ of your shots you're going to need to use a sight focus on. So I am actually shooting with only my dominant eye, but I'm shooting an iron sighted pistol for 95%+ of the time I'm pulling the trigger. You know, and that's the single biggest area where I differ from most other guys. And you know, if you talk to them, they'll squint or, like you said, use taped over glasses or something, you know, anytime they do have a precision shot. But, you know, I know quite a few people from 15, 20 yards in, they're using both eyes open. They're looking, you know, they're have the ability to focus on the sights and make accurate shots that way. And that's great. And for anybody that can do that, I go for it. It's I won't necessarily deny that it's better, but every time I can't do it. You know, I've worked on it and trained on it for years, and my right eye is so much more dominant that leaving my left eye open trying to focus on the sights, it just, the double vision is just too much to contend with. So I just close an eye and shoot with one eye open.
Well, you're not alone, you know. The benefit of talking to so many people, Eric Raffel does the same thing.
I know.
Okay. So, yeah, you're in good company with that. Very interesting, especially for Still Challenge. That's very interesting that you do that. You had also mentioned, I saw this video you did a long time ago where you were talking about seeing like on something like Smoke and Hope, and you're seeing a pattern of your impacts as opposed to a cluster. Like if they're like lining up.
Yes.
What exactly were you talking about in that?
So a lot of times what you see, you know, on Smoke and Hope is a great example. Accelerator is another great example. You know, these very big targets, you know, at close distances where you may or may not actually stop the gun when you pull the trigger. You know, so what I kind of look for there is horizontal stringing is kind of expected on some of those situations, whereas a vertical string is not good because that means you got some issue with your wrist and you're healing the gun either down or up. You know, if you've got vertical stringing, but if you've got horizontal stringing on those types of targets, chances are you're just landing in a slightly different place on it each time, you know, and if you just momentarily pause the gun, you know, you're going to end up with some horizontal stringing on those. And I think that's indicative of being able to push on your speed a little bit. One thing that I do try and do, especially with an iron sighted gun, it sounds a little funky, but shooting a plain white target is one of the hardest things you can do because there's nothing to look at. You've got this whole 12 inch plate, you know, that you're trying to hit instead of, you know, a specific point on the plate, like you would say an IPSC stage or, you know, another target, yes, you have the big target, but you have that center zone that you're trying to hit. With Steel Challenge, now all of a sudden you've got the whole target that you're trying to hit. So you see a lot of times on my first and second runs, you know, especially with an iron sight gun, you'll see me really try and hit the middle of the target so that all of my subsequent runs, I have an aiming point that's in the middle of the target. So when I transition the gun, my eyes are finding that impact so that that gives me a defined point that I can push the gun to. You know, whereas if I've got this giant, just white target that, you know, now I'm landing all around it, you know, whereas if I have a good defined hit, you know, in the center or close to the center, that gives my eyes a much better visual reference to push the gun to, be very aggressive, and chances are that's going to give you more success with landing the gun on the target, landing the sights on the target. You know, from there, I'm not necessarily trying to hit that same spot. Sometimes it works out that way. You know, but what it does is it gives me that margin of error. Now I have something to truly look at on the target instead of just trying to find the target, and I may push the gun and end up on the edge of it, but I'm still seeing white behind the sights. Yeah, so I'm saying, okay, it's good when I'm actually on the edge of the target. If I get a good hit in the center of the target, that's going to set me up for the next four runs so that I have a good defined aiming point. Plus, it gives you a lot of confidence. You get the first run out of the way. If you screw up on the first run, then it's pucker time because now you got to be perfect. You know, so a lot of times I try and go out the first run, just shoot nice and solid, shoot the middle of the targets, and be done, you know, and then worry about building speed. You know, in my ideal happy place, my first four runs are all within a tenth of a second of each other. You know, and then the last run I can push and try and pick up a little time. I don't want to necessarily, some people try and get progressively faster. I don't necessarily want to do that. I want to shoot three solid ones, and then I'm going to push a little bit on number four if I'm clean. Then I'm going to push a little bit harder on number five if I'm clean on number four. Yeah, so that way I do get progressively faster in some regard, but I make sure I got three of them, you know, in the bag as much as possible so that the pressure to perform perfectly isn't near as much anymore.
A couple more tactics, and then we can wrap it up. But so how, you know, the nice thing about having these stages that are always the same, you know how people start to learn how to game these stages and, you know, figure out where they're going to get a little bit of an advantage. So how much do you put weight on where you're standing, how you're lining up? Is that important? Is that going to give you a little bit, a second or two, if, you know, you line up on one side of the box over the other side because you're seeing something different downrange?
Definitely a little bit. I generally, if you stand in the front right corner of the box, it's going to give you the best view of the targets. But, you know, there are a couple that are different, like Smoke and Hope. You know, because the swing is so wide, you got to stand a little bit differently. You know, for the most part, I would say I'm setting up on the second target I'm going to shoot, you know, and then, you know, pivoting to get to the first target. So that doesn't put me, like if you set up on the stop plate or set up on, somewhere else on the stage, you got to pivot really hard, to get to the first target, and that's going to interfere with your draw. You know, so I would rather have a little bit more difficulty with your natural point of aim when I've already got the gun out on target and I'm shooting, you know, where I can drive it a little bit better here, you know, all over the range, as opposed to, you know, trying to get it out of the holster and I'm standing all funky and my holster is now, you know, pointed all this way, but the target's directly in front of me, you know, so now when I come at the gun, I've got to twist it to get it back to the target, you know, all sorts of the little stuff like that. I'd rather be pretty much set up on the first target, you know, to ensure I get a good draw, a good grip, and that's going to give me more success for the stage rather than setting up on the stop plate. So, yes, I, you know, it's very natural to get to the stop, but you know, if you're all discombobulated and wound up trying to start, then, you know, that's not going to be an ideal situation. You know, speed option in particular, I set up totally different, again, because the swings are so wide. You know, I'm setting up kind of totally different than I do on any other stage, you know, and setting it up so I can draw the gun correctly and then finish out the rest of the stage.
You know, when I was training with Jerry, he told me about, like, thinking a rhythm in your head. You know, like there's a melody to the sound of how the plates are going to hit.
Always.
Do you do that too?
Yeah. I mean, I would definitely say, you know, some of the stages now, you know, are basically just, there's faster you can pull the trigger almost. I mean, Showdown's a great example of basically there's, you know, there's the rhythm to it, but it's not all the same. Whereas, you know, something like speed option in particular is going to be, you know, two quick shots, a pause, you know, to shoot the option plate, and then two quick shots again. You know, that definitely has its own kind of rhythm to it. You know, if I had to go, it's just ding, 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 ding. You know, that sort of rhythm, you know, so I would definitely say that's a very valid thing. As I said, it's less so on a couple of the stages now just because they're so fast. You know, it's basically pull the gun out and pull the trigger as fast as you can. But there's definitely a rhythm to most of the stages.
How important, I don't know if that's important is the right word, but is there a good benefit of shooting steel challenge will cross over into USPSA? I mean, they're different kind of skill sets. My personal opinion is that yes, it's beneficial to do steel, because I know a lot of people won't shoot steel challenge because they're like, I like USPSA better. It's different, blah blah blah. But what do you think on that?
Oh, there's a benefit to cross training no matter what the sport is. Shooting IDPA has made me a better USPSA shooter. Shooting USPSA has made me a better IDPA shooter. Shooting steel challenge has made me a better shooter overall. Shooting Bianchi Cup made me a better USPSA shooter. And that's simply cross-training on different sports, learning how to perform under pressure, you know, especially the last two, in particular steel challenge and Bianchi Cup. There's a lot of pressure to perform at given times that the other sports have a much different approach to just because of the way they're set up. You know, Bianchi Cup, again, you have to stay in there, you have to shoot, you have to perform, and you don't get a second chance there for sure. You know, and it's very difficult. You know, even though the times for most of us consider are forever in a day, you know, when you're trying to shoot a 4-inch circle at 50 yards, that's still pretty hard. You know, so there's a cross-training benefit to any sport that you participate in. I said every sport that I have shot, experienced, and done has made me better at the other sports. The one exception to that, and this is where I put on my joke hat, is free gun. Free gun will make you a terrible pistol shooter if you let it. Because two shots anywhere on an IPSC target, you know, you don't care anymore because you're also 7 yards away. That's changed actually quite a bit on a series. Now, that's actually changed in the past couple of years where, you know, more difficult pistol shooting I've seen has gotten into free gun. But, you know, back in, even when I got into it, which was after the true Wild West days of free gun, I mean, If you let free gun make you a terrible pistol shooter, it would make you a terrible pistol shooter. But that's not so much the case anymore. But yeah, anytime you have an ability to go cross train in a different sport or different environment, I think it's going to help you. You know, now no matter what, in specific instance with USPSA and Steel Challenge, you're going to get the visual acuity and patience, you know, that would take years upon years to develop in USPSA, you know, you're going to get it in months and still challenged just because that's the environment that you're in, you know. So definitely, even if you just go shoot a 22, it's still challenged match, so you're not spending tons of money, you know, on ammo or whatever. Of course, nowadays 22 is about as much as anything else.
Yes.
If you can find it. Of course, that's mostly gone away. Now it's just expensive. I was just down the street from where they make it. It's still expensive. But yeah, I definitely think that any training value, any training that you do in other sports is going to help you in every sport.
Well, if people wanted to learn from you, is that something that you offer? Do you teach people? Are you going to classes to instruct?
Absolutely. Couple things I got going on that front. I would say is next year I do plan to teach some more classes. This year has been pretty interesting in the firearms industry. My day job is within the firearms industry. I'm the sales and marketing manager for Freedom Munitions. It's been an interesting year in the firearms industry. That has between that and going to the World Shoot in France and all the time that I dedicated to that, you know, it didn't give me the same as a opportunity to get out and into the world and teach. I want to teach some more classes next year for sure. So, you know, anybody that's interested can hit me up on that. I took over the MGM Junior Shooting Camp from Mike and Rhonda Gibson this year. So we're moving that to Lewiston, where I live, like an awesome range that's here just outside of town that we're going to do the junior camp on. And I hope to teach some more classes here for the Pacific Northwest, too. In addition to that, you guys are going to be hearing more about the junior camp soon. With some of the programs that we're going to put in place, it's going to be really good for everybody. So stay tuned for some more stuff on the junior camp. We're going to have some pretty sweet sweepstakes related to the camp that we should have ready, I'd say, hopefully about another month or so, or right after SHOT Show at the latest. So we're going to have some cool stuff going on there. And then, of course, I run a website called myguntips.com. So that's just a subscription base. Go, you sign up. It's $5 a month, so it's super cheap. And, I post videos and tips and a bunch of Steel Challenge stuff. I'm working this year to get some other instructors involved and done some work with, Ernie Langdon. Did some stuff with him a couple years ago. Going to try and get some more guys involved in it. So, you'll see a greater diversity of instructors within that site, hopefully later on this year, too.
That's very cool. And all this stuff will be linked down below if you guys are interested. You don't have to search really hard. Just move your eyes down and click a link, and you'll be...
As the YouTubers go, click here.
That's right.
Click there.
Yes. So thank you so much, BJ, for sharing. Steel Challenge is a great sport. It's fun at the same time, and you get to go fast, which everybody wants
to
do.
Get to go fast. Ricky Bobby.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Firearms Nation podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. Go to firearmsnation.com right now for show notes, awesome videos, and be sure to sign up to get your free firearms training ebook. Come back next week for another episode of the Firearms Nation podcast. Join the nation.